crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, from the neighborhood of Baca, about a mile and a half from the Temple Mount. For those of you that know Jerusalem geography, if this is your first time with us on this program, we like to discuss biblical archaeology as well as prophetically significant news. On today's program, we're going to talk about the recent discovery of the Isaiah seal impression. Unless you're hiding under a rock over the past week and a half, then you've definitely heard of this discovery. It made international news. It made, obviously, news here in Israel as well, of course. It was featured on the front page of the Jerusalem Post, as well as in Hebrew newspapers as well. And we're going to talk about this bulla. We have intimate knowledge of it. I was actually back there in 2009, 2010, potentially the one that filled the bucket of dirt that would have contained the Isaiah seal impression. Unfortunately, I did not see it in the field. Nevertheless, that bucket of dirt was taken to be sifted, and then it was discovered, and then it was reanalyzed and analyzed again over the past few years, to the point that Dr. Elot Mazar felt comfortable releasing it to the public just two Thursdays ago on February 22nd. And we're going to talk about that bulla, some of the reaction from around the world, some of the negative reaction as well, and just address some of those claims, because it is very difficult to understand sometimes who's right when it comes to biblical archaeology. There, it is an extremely charged subject, because you are dealing with people's faith in many, many, many ways, in many instances. Many people do believe that the Bible, the book of Isaiah, was in particular, this was a book that was written by the prophet by that same name. He had a lot of interaction with the kings of his day. I think four or five kings, it says, that he was working with, or at least underneath their reigns. And then it came to King Hezekiah late in the 8th century, early 7th century, and he had an extremely intimate relationship with the prophet Isaiah. And so you hear a lot often about discoveries in Israel, and it's hard to determine sometimes whether they're real or not. Well, this one is real. This one's definitely real. It came out of the right layer. It came out of contextually. It was found amidst other artifacts from the late 8th, early 7th century. The assemblage that it was found with checks out. And so this is definitely not a forgery, definitely not a fraud. This is the real deal, this artifact. And we're going to talk about that on today's show. What's interesting about this seal impression is that it actually has the name prophet or Navi. In ancient Hebrew, or in Hebrew, Navi. And what's interesting about this is you wouldn't necessarily expect a prophet to have on his own personal seal the word prophet on there. That's kind of odd, because it's not necessarily a title that you would, or a job description that you would definitely publicize. It was something that you were. If you look back through the Bible, it normally talks about different prophets, different with their first and last name, it will give, and they function as a prophet, as God's messenger to the nation, generally to correct the nation and to show them where they need to improve, where they need to change their ways in order for God to bless them. That's what the prophets did anciently, and Isaiah was no different than that. But on this seal, we actually have the word prophet. It's interesting, when this bulla was discovered or uncovered to the public a week and a half ago now, on Friday, the day after it was released, I had a pediatrician visiting my house, because the day before, on the release of the Isaiah bulla, my first son was born, and so we had to have a doctor that came the next day to check him out and see that everything was okay, and indeed everything is okay with little Nehemiah. But he even asked this question. He asked what I did, and I said I was an archaeologist here in Israel, in Jerusalem, working with Dr. Elot Mazar, currently on the Ophel. And he asked if we'd find anything amazing, or if he had found anything interesting lately. And I directed him to the front post, front page of the Jerusalem Post that I had here on hand. And then we began talking about it, because this seal impression, it's not extremely clear. There are bits of it that are broken off. But it wasn't the bits that were broken off that this pediatrician had a question about. It was rather the use of the name prophet on the seal. Normally you would have Isaiah, the son of Amos, and it would have your first and last name. Rarely do they have the actual title of a prophet. Well, never up to this point have we seen the word prophet designating his occupation, his job description, on a bulla. We haven't found that before. And so typically you would expect to find a first and last name that is the person. And the prophet is what he does for God, but it's not something that you would necessarily see on a bulla. And so he said, is that odd? And I said, yes. Yes, it is odd in a way that you would have the word prophet there. A lot of the other prophets of the Bible, they were very important figures, but they were mainly used by God to deliver a warning message to the nation, potentially before it went into captivity, or tell them to repent so that they could be blessed by God. And so they didn't necessarily come, they weren't known as a prophet, or it wasn't their job description, even though a lot of them were other things, and then they became a prophet for God. Whereas Isaiah is different. He's different. And you would expect him, of any of the prophets, to have the actual bulla or seal that says Isaiah prophet. Well, why is that? Well, read through the Bible. Read through the Bible, particularly the books of Chronicles, Kings, and Isaiah. And what do you see? You see an intimate relationship between prophet and King Hezekiah. Prophet and king. This is an instance where a king actually turns to God's prophet, asks him what he should do, and then follows that advice and ends up being saved. And the nation ends up being saved. I don't believe that people generally realize just how close the southern kingdom of Judah was to going into captivity with the northern tribes of Israel. And yet it was the result of this king-prophet relationship, this close king-prophet relationship that saved Judah in the late 8th century, early 7th century. Again, they could have gone into captivity at that point. They didn't. And that was largely a function of this relationship. And so because he was so well known, because he was in the royal court often, there are even instances where King Hezekiah needed the prophet's counsel, and it was almost immediate. Messengers could just run over to the other side of the palace, find Isaiah and ask him, and then return back to the king with the answer. He was there. He was there. He wasn't there like Jeremiah was there. Jeremiah was in the official palace as well, but he was in the dungeon. Not Isaiah. Isaiah was held up with esteem by the leader, by King Hezekiah, and he listened to Isaiah the prophet. The king did. The king humbled himself to listen to Isaiah the prophet, and following his counsel, following his advice, the nation was saved from Assyrian captivity and would survive for another 100+ years. And so is it odd that a prophet would have that title on a seal impression? Yes. Is it odd that Isaiah, the prophet, would have it on his seal? No, it isn't at all. He was well respected in that office during his day, while he was alive. You didn't have to wait till after he died for these prophecies to come true. They were there, coming true, right when he was there. And he was acknowledged as that by the king. And so it fits that he would have the word prophet on his seal. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the original uncovering of this seal impression, with the location it was found, and what that says about the likelihood that this is Isaiah the prophet's seal. We'll be right back.
KPCG 101.3 Trumpet Radio is your source of understanding. Trumpet Radio broadcasts from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma, and online at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening. At one time, the kings of ancient Israel and Judah, during the period of the divided monarchy, were not known apart from the biblical record. Critics did not believe they existed. But the relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and personalities that were at one time known to us only from Scripture. The Hezekiah Bulla is the latest find among literally hundreds of archaeological discoveries that corroborates Bible history. To learn more about this God-inspired text, request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free booklet, we would like for you to enroll in the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This three-year college course includes 36 lessons and examines not just the fundamental questions of religion, but the fundamental questions of life. Request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about the recent uncovering and revealing to the public of the seal of Isaiah the prophet. This is a seal that you can read a lot about on our website, watchjerusalem.co.il. We have a video there that I'll even play for you today, hopefully, if we have time. And then we also have an accompanying article written by Brad McDonald, who had exclusive access to Dr. Eilat Mazar in the lead up to this, to the release of this artifact. A lot of the others, they had to interview her after the fact, but Mr. McDonald, Brad McDonald, got in there right away and was able to interview her before it was made public. Of course, Dr. Eilat Mazar also wrote an article about this bulla, and it's featured in the current issue of Biblical Archaeology Review, and that issue is the 50th year anniversary or 50-year tribute to Herschel Shanks, the former editor now of Biblical Archaeology Review, since he has retired. Dr. Mazar gave this breaking news to them as a gift, to him really, as a gift for his service to biblical archaeology. And so you can read up about the full study of that in those two locations. You can also go to keytodavidcity.com. And there we have a link to Dr. Eilat Mazar's official Ophel Excavations Volume 2 final reports, in which you can even delve even deeper into this subject if you're an archaeologist or historian and you want to uncover the facts yourself. Well, right now I'd like to talk more about the context in which it was found, the location in which it was found, because this is the most critical part, I believe, in determining whether this is Isaiah the prophet or just Isaiah, somebody with the name Isaiah and the last name Navi. Because that is what people are saying. There are a couple of letters that are missing. The most important one of those is the Aleph that comes at the end of the word Navi. Without the word, without the Aleph, generally the word prophet or Navi, the word Navi doesn't make prophet. It needs the Aleph. Well, on our seal impression, the Isaiah seal impression, there is room for the Aleph, plenty of room for it. And in conversations with a number or one prominent archaeologist or historian and epigraphist, he wasn't willing to concede that this empty space in this lower third of this bulla could have been the Aleph, making the word Navi, which would put it beyond doubt that this is Isaiah the prophet for some reason. But there's space for it. There's definitely space for it. And on these little tiny seal impressions, all the space is used. All the space is used. And so we need something there at the end of Navi without the Aleph. Is it an Aleph? Is it something else? Is it a picture? Is it something else? We don't know. But it makes sense that it is a Navi and that this is Isaiah the prophet because of the context in which it was found. This is an important thing that Rolson, he's a pretty important or very vocal, I should say, epigraphist. He writes a lot online. He's got a website devoted to such things. He's already given, I think 1, 2, and 3 parts rebuke to the well, he didn't actually rebuke it necessarily, but he addresses all the concerns about why this might not be Isaiah the prophet. And indeed, Dr. Ilot Mazar did that herself. And so I think that if he went through and read her article, first of all, he would see that she addresses every single argument or most arguments that he brings up. But the one thing that he fails to talk about is the context. And I don't blame him for this necessarily, because he's an epigraphist. He gets the bulla or the seal, he reads it, he studies it, and determines from the letters what's missing, what's already been found, whether it is Isaiah the prophet or not. That's how he's looking at it. But by taking it out of the context in which it was found, you severely weaken the argument that it is Isaiah the prophet. The context in which something is found is absolutely everything in archaeology. That's why archaeology is such a painstaking process. You're trying to be able to see different layers, separate the different material from different layers to ensure that you can document where everything is found to give you the best possible date for the structure that you're finding or even the finds that you discover. That's why it's so slow. Anybody could come to an excavation, get a little mini digger, a little backhoe of sorts, and come in and dig out the excavation and leave the walls that are remaining there. But you won't know from when those walls were built. You will probably lose all the small artifacts as well that are inside those layers. Context is super important, and it's the context of the Isaiah in Bulla that is the greatest argument for it being Isaiah the prophet. Let me just read from you a small portion from Dr. Mazar's book. It's entitled Discovering the Solomonic Wall in Jerusalem, and it details the Ophel excavations up to about 2010. It talks about her grandfather's work, Dr. Benjamin Mazar's work in the late 60s, early 70s. It talks about her return to the Ophel in 1986 and a little bit later with her grandfather, and then talks about her renewed excavations in 2009, 2010. It was the excavation in 2009-10 where the Isaiah Bulla was found. Before I just read this, I do want to talk about quickly the discovery of the Hezekiah Bulla that was released to the public back in 2015. The Hezekiah Bulla was found just outside what Dr. Mazar believes is a royal bakery. Whether it's a bakery or not, it's definitely a royal structure. It's definitely extremely early on during Iron 2A when it was constructed. And just on the outside of that, just over the wall, just where there was likely some trash that was thrown, where layers built up because of that, the seal impressions saying, belonging to Hezekiah, son of Ahaz, king of Judah, was found there. Now, this one, nobody denies. Nobody denies that this is not Hezekiah, the king of Judah. Now, this bulla was found extremely close to the Isaiah Bulla. They were found in the same layer, although that layer had disturbance in the middle of it because of an intruding Herodian structure that had been dug down through the sediment, through the different layers there. But even before I want to talk about that, just looking at this in hindsight, Dr. Mazar came to this area just outside the Royal Bakery, and we have a map for you, and I'll post a map for you exactly where this was found on the website so you can see. But this area was largely excavated back in the 60s by Dame Kathleen Kenyon, extremely prominent archaeologist. She excavated Jerusalem, she excavated Jericho and other places, underneath the or during the time that this belonged to Jordan, this territory belonged to Jordan, and she actually excavated down almost all the way to bedrock, right close to where both the Hezekiah Bulla and the Isaiah Bulla was found. And I'm just amazed looking at this, and I even talked about this with Dr. Mazar, I guess it was 3 days ago now, just how amazing it is that we could even find these two bulla, that Kathleen Kenyon left a couple of spots on the ground, and they were really small, that she didn't excavate at all. And Dr. Mazar thought I was coming at it like, oh, I can't believe she didn't excavate at all. What incompetence. But no, I wasn't coming at it like that at all. I was thankful for the fact that she didn't excavate it all. If Kathleen Kenyon, back in the 60s, excavated all of this area, and we're only talking about this square that she excavated, I guess it's probably 4 meters by 5 meters down, she hit bedrock in some locations, but then stopped. If she had excavated it all, if she had took away the last meter of soil, there'd be no Hezekiah Buller found today. There'd be definitely no Isaiah Buller found today. And yet, there was a couple of patches of earth down here that she left. And when Dr. Elot Mazar came back in 2009 to finish off excavations here, it was time, she said, well, let's go back and let's dig those couple of areas that Kathleen Kenyon left. And Square S2, I believe she called it, Kathleen Kenyon did. And so one of those areas was where the Hezekiah Buller was found. And a couple of paces to the right of that area, because the area in between was disturbed by a Herodian structure that had dug through the Iron Age layers. And it was also, part of it was missing because Kathleen Kenyon dug to bedrock in between the two areas. Well, just on the other side of that was a small patch of dirt. A small patch of dirt that I actually had the opportunity, me and Harley Breath back from Edmond, Oklahoma, had the opportunity to excavate in. We thought it wouldn't take as long as it did, but it ended up taking a fair bit of time. And now is where I want to quote from Dr. Elot Mazar's book, Discovering the Solomonic Wall. And she wrote this book not knowing about the Hezekiah Buller. She wrote this book not knowing about the Isaiah Buller as well. And so here we go. In my grandfather's Temple Mount excavations, a large wall was uncovered adjacent to the eastern outer corner, or eastern corner of what we know today to be the royal structure. That's this bakery, this royal structure. Preserved to a height of 4 meters and with a width of 2.4 meters and displaying a similar construction style. When viewing it from the north, it was possible to see that it was built directly upon bedrock. So she's talking about this wall that abuts the royal structure that continues further to the north. Then she says, we were able to follow it along a straight line for 37 meters toward the northeast, and its straight route makes sense when taking into account the topography of the Ophel. The wall lies on the straightest part of the otherwise curving hilltop, and so we dubbed it the Straight Wall. We were eager to learn more about the wall that seemed to conform so well to the fortification line that emerged from the gatehouse complex into the royal structure. This fortification line gradually descended the slope of the hill until it reached a straighter topographical line with which this wall was built. And so she's talking about this wall that abuts the royal structure in the Ophel, and we didn't really have a good date for it yet. And so she said, well, let's use this opportunity to find a date for this straight wall that goes against the royal structure to the south. Again, we're talking about the location and the patch of dirt in which the Isaiah Buller was found. Then she writes this. Though we were left with the impression that the straight wall dates from the First Temple period, we did not have any additional data to support this. We could see, however, that the wall was relatively early because of the remains of a first century plastered cistern found covering part of its southern face. We cleaned a small area of about 1 meter by 1 meter at the foot of the juncture of the southeastern wall of the royal structure with the straight wall. So basically she's saying, right where this straight wall that goes on for 37 meters that we didn't have a date for, that looked like it was from the First Temple period, right where that wall abuts the royal structure that we do have a good date for, again, around Solomon's time, there was, right where they meet, there was this patch of earth down on bedrock, 1 meter by 1 meter. This is tiny. 1 meter by 1 meter, three feet by 3 feet of earth that I don't know how tall it was when we got there, but this is where Kathleen Kenyon excavated down to and she stopped, which is kind of rare. Why would you stop at the lowest portion of this wall, especially where two walls connect? That's where the information would be garnered. If the same layers touch both walls at the very base, you can determine that they're from the same time period. Then Dr. Mazar writes this, talking about at the bottom of this juncture between the two walls. And we were surprised to uncover a number of undisturbed stratified layers from the First Temple period lying adjacent to the southeastern face of both walls down to bedrock. We thus had the unexpected fortune to collect more finds that would add even more data to our understanding of the royal structure and as well dating the straight wall. Although the excavation area is very small, it was obvious that we could get answers to some crucial questions. So she's about to dive into the excavation of this 1 meter by 1 meter patch that just happened to be below at the base of these both of these walls. And again, hindsight, this is where the Isaiah Buller was found. But we were surprised to find this patch of earth there. Then she says this in her book. I wish to note that the relation at this point, I wish to note that the relationship between my grandfather and the Ambassador College first established in the Temple Mount excavations was enthusiastically renewed in 2006 after so many years by Mr. Gerald Flurry, the Chancellor of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma, which sought to continue the educational philosophy of the original Ambassador College and his son. And his son, sorry, Mr. Stephen Flurry, president of the college. So what's she's at, just stopping the discussion of the part where the Isaiah Buller was found to give you some history. These excavations at the Temple Mount were huge. They were labeled the Big Dig from 68, beginning in 68, going through to about 76, 77. Ambassador College underneath Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong sent over hundreds of volunteers every summer. Just under 100 volunteers every summer, hundreds in total. And now she's saying that here we are back with her. We're continuing the legacy of Mr. Armstrong. We're now Herbert W. Armstrong College. I teach there. I'm a faculty member there. But now we are getting to go back and excavate right at that same place with this renewed partnership between the Mazar family and Mr. Armstrong. Then she says this, in fact, students from the college took part in our 2006 to 2008 City of David excavations with some staying for many months. And then she mentions me because I got to be an area supervisor there. But then she's talking about it in the context of this small area here, this 1 meter by 1 meter. She writes, we were sure that excavating such a small area with a depth of 2.25 meters would not take that much that long, 2 or 3 days at most. No one could have imagined that it would last a month and a half. Brent essentially scratched off every layer by thin layer in order to make sure that we would not miss any valuable data, revealing a picture of refuse thrown out of the royal structure, which piled up at the foot of the outer wall. Needless to say, the earth fills from his excavation were sent to wet sifting, with the lowest 20 centimeters found to contain many balls and jar sherds similar to those found in the lower gatehouse fill and dated to the 10th century. The continuation of this lowest layer in the direction of the extra tower in the west may very well have been the lowest layer missed by Kathleen Kenyon during her excavations in this square. And so she says that Kathleen Kenyon missed this, even though it would have helped with her dating. Then she says this, the fills contained a large amount of special finds, some of which lent support to the royal administrative character of the royal structure. Of particular note is the total of 28 bullae featuring names written in ancient Hebrew, which had all been found by wet sifting, and it's quite possible that they would have otherwise been lost. They would have been lost. They would have been lost if Kathleen Kenyon excavated all the way through here. But she didn't get to. For some reason, she left it. And thankfully, we were able to go back under Dr. Elot Mazar's foresight and say, that area down there, that's important. I know it's only a meter by a meter, but it's an important area. Let's go back and excavate that. And so we go back and we excavate that. And then as she says there, back in 2000, I think she published that 2010 or 2012, there were 28 bulla that were found. And she mentions a couple of them. One she doesn't mention is belonging to Isaiah the prophet, because she didn't know at the time that she had one that said belonging to Isaiah prophet. And yet, here we are, 2018, February 22nd, and Isaiah the prophet resurfaced out of the ground in this one location, the one location, small patch of dirt that was left by Kathleen Kenyon. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? She didn't have the technology at the time, Kathleen Kenyon did, nor the manpower to wet sift everything. And without wet sifting, this bulla would not have been discovered. Very highly improbable that it would have been uncovered. So thank you, Kathleen Kenyon. I know she's no longer alive, but we're thankful that you didn't excavate it all, that you left something to the future generation of archaeologists that could come back with hopefully improved technology, improved ways of excavating, and uncover what, well, discover what remained in those stratified layers. And one of those things that remained was this puller, Isaiah the prophet. So let's just talk about the context. This is what, again, a lot of epigraphers that pick holes in the theory that this is Isaiah the prophet, this is the thing that they miss. They say it's Isaiah, sure, definitely. But it's some guy with the surname Navi, which happens to be prophet. It just happens to be prophet. It's Isaiah, Navi, missing the Aleph, but of course, you know, it could be there still, and so it can't be Isaiah the prophet. Well, looking at it as an epigraphist, you would have to say it could be Isaiah the prophet. It definitely well could be. It could have an Aleph there. But then you must consider the context in which it was found. This is just a few meters away from where King Hezekiah was found, at about the same depth, with the same other artifacts around it. It's like they were throwing out this refuse from the royal bakery at maybe some later period when they're doing some type of remodeling to the structure in Jeremiah's time, or just before Jeremiah's time. They get rid of a couple of layers from Hezekiah's time, and they're throwing buckets of dirt over the wall, or stuff, some refuse over the wall. And, you know, in the same bucket of dirt or two buckets of dirt later at that time, you have a bulla relating to Hezekiah the king thrown out the window. And then the same day, perhaps, that it's being emptied from the inside structure and thrown over the wall, you have Isaiah prophet thrown out. Now, what's the chances? What are the chances of someone else being right next to Hezekiah and his name being Isaiah Navi? It's almost like you've got two guys with the same name, one Isaiah the prophet and the other one Isaiah Navi wishes he was the prophet, but both of them had apparently a very close relationship with King Hezekiah. What are the chances of that? That King Hezekiah had a friend, a close friend, right next to him, as far as how they were found, that had a last name Navi and a first name prophet? Or is it more likely, as the Bible puts them together at least 15 times in the very same scripture, was it Isaiah the prophet that was with Hezekiah and that they are excavated, taken up in the very same season of 2000 and 2009, 2010, excavated right next the areas, and the dirt comes out, the dirt goes to sifting, and here we find Isaiah the prophet and King Hezekiah. The closest king-prophet relationship in the Old Testament, it definitely seems. And fruits of that relationship are existent in the longevity of the kingdom of Judah as opposed to the kingdom of Israel. That's an important relationship. What are the chances that it's not Isaiah the prophet? And that's about all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening to the program. If you want to find out more of Isaiah the prophet, the bulla itself, please go ahead and I'll leave a couple of links for you to go to, make it easy for you. If you're listening to this online, you can go to watchjerusalem.co.il and look at our article on the subject, or you can go to Key to David City as well and follow the links there to go to Dr. Mazar's official study in her final reports. The book hasn't even come out yet, but we have a PDF of a chapter of one of those books available for your perusal. If you'd like to send us some feedback, or if you would like to give us some tips on how we can improve, or subjects you might want covered on this program, you can do so by writing emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.